Welcome to Barron Talks. I'm Dr. Ralph Fort, and today my special guest is Brian Cupcella, the CEO of Trucklight and Clarience Corporation and also a Penn State Barron grad. Welcome to the show, Brian.
Thank you, Dr. Fort.
Well, let me, I'm going to run through your bio here a little bit and tell people about your very storied career, I'll say, and a lot of the things that you've done. You're CEO, actually, technically, of Clarience Technologies, and it is a global transportation company, 19 locations around the globe. And we're going to get into this discussion today. I know your company at least pretty well, and I'm always just amazed by the amount of innovation going on there, how you're pushing your team forward to develop new ideas. And you recently moved your company here into Knowledge Park, your corporate headquarters. It's a big deal for the community. We are very grateful for that. But I'd be remiss in not saying that you are a Penn State alumni fellow, and that's a really special designation. Only one-tenth of 1% of our alumni achieve that designation. You are also a member of our Council of Fellows Board of Directors. So anyways, I don't want to embarrass you too much, Brian, but again, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Well, you know, I always love to hear about your path. How did you end up at Penn State Barron? You didn't start here, but you finished your degree here.
That's correct. It's almost by luck. So I had finished my associate's degree in Altoona, was accepted into the ceramics program at University Park. And I was down there for a summer, you know, going through a foundry class. And I quickly realized that maybe that environment wasn't best for me. A friend of mine was coming to Barron to finish up his engineering degree. And I just tagged along with him and came on campus mid-August, went into the admissions department, and they had asked me if I was aware of the plastics program, which I said I was not. So they put me in front of Paul Cook, Professor Cook, and I graduated with a plastics degree shortly thereafter.
Well, Paul Cook was founder of the program, advocate, and, you know, just really quite persuasive.
Yeah, it was a great guy, and along with John Beaumont.
Yeah, they really built the program up and had an influence on so many. So did you immediately take to plastics? Did you, you know, was it a little foreign, or was it, you were hooked on plastics as soon as you started to study it?
No, I think I grasped it pretty quick. It was an interesting program, the polymer side of it. You know, it was still a bit of a hands-on design application sort of a program, which was of interest to me, which is what I wanted to do. And no, I think the professors kept it interesting. It was early on in the program, so we were the second graduating class at that time. So I think it was still evolving as we were evolving, and that helped quite a bit. So, and just the one-on-one with the professors went a long way for me.
Yeah, you were pioneers. We had actually completely different laboratory facilities at that time. Looks a lot different than it does now. But you were also classmates with people who then became faculty members here.
That's correct. John Meckley and
probably Jason Williams was around that time.
Jason,
as well.
I think, was also, yes.
Yeah. So anyways, you studied here at Barron. You graduated in 1990, I believe, and started at Trucklight. Tell us a little bit about who is this company, Trucklight. It's a lot more complicated than lights for trucks.
It is. So Trucklight was founded in the late 50s by George Baldwin. And he was a truck driver, and his lights were failing on the back of his truck because they were bulb replaceable products. So he designed a light for himself that had a shock mount inside, and got a patent on that technology. Actually made them in his home. It was a cottage industry. People would, ladies and men would come in and pick up components, go home and build them in their homes, and then bring the finished goods back, and he would then distribute those over time. It was picked up by Quaker State in the mid-60s, and then sold to Penske Corporation in November of 1997. And that business has evolved from a truck lighting company to a telematics, off-road, marine, fuel filtration, electronics company over the last 30 years. It's really transitioned from an electrical company to a pure electronics company.
Pure. And you were the first, if I'm not mistaken, you were the first company to really introduce LED lights into the automotive industry.
That's correct. We launched the first LED stop, tail, and turn lamp in 1992. So we think about LED technology as relatively new. It's 30 years old.
Mm-hmm.
It's older than the shock-mounted lights that were developed in the 60s at this point in time. We launched the first stop, tail, and turn lamp. We launched the first amber Ford park and turn light. We were the first to take LEDs into forward lighting in the transportation industry. So in 2012, we launched the first federal motor vehicle safety standard legal high beam, low beam LED headlamp system in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And we put it on Class A trucks running around the United States. Now, since then, it's taken off globally and it's on passenger cars and medium duty and heavy duty trucks.
Why did it take so long for LEDs to be accepted?
The technology wasn't bright enough. It took a while for the diodes to evolve to the point where they could give off enough light and not too much heat. Heat reduces the light output. So the circuit board design along with the heat sink design was critical
mm-hmm.
in overcoming the heat in order to pull the heat out to keep the lights bright enough. But the diodes themselves needed to evolve to give off enough photons of light to be legal.
You know, one of the things that always fascinated me when I visited your plant was how many different technologies. It's not just plastics, it's not just electrical. You had everything from optics to heat dissipation, thermal. I mean, truly this very, I'll say, multidisciplinary approach is necessary. And not everybody probably can see across all those boundaries.
No, that's right. The business is very vertically integrated, both manufacturing and how we go to market. So, you know, we buy raw wire, we make our own wire harness systems, we buy individual electronics components, we assemble our own circuit boards, we buy raw plastic, we manufacture our own plastic components globally. We do the same thing within our engineering department. So we completely design, prototype, we do all the thermo analysis work, all the mold flow work, all the electronics development work internal.
Wow.
Protect that mm-hmm. as much as we can. And so we're vertically integrated on both ends of it.
So you have a clear culture of innovation. I mean, where'd that come from? How do you build it, maintain that?
It's not easy. You need the right people in place around you. They have the vision. You've got to be out in front of the customer, understanding what their needs are, you know, knowing what the problems are in the industry. We don't invent technology. So Clarence Technologies, Trucklight, and all the other subsidiaries, we're not technology inventors. We go out and look for an issue, a problem in our marketplace, and we try to apply technology that exists to that. That's not solving that problem at that point in time. So we apply existing technology to current problems.
Mm-hmm.
It allows us to get the market a lot faster.
But you do it in a way that your competitors obviously are always keeping up with you.
They're always chasing us, and we're mindful of that.
And I mean, how does that happen? Do you have a good process, or how do you hire people, and what are the skills and behaviors that you're looking for?
Well, that's evolved over time. So as a company's transitioned from electrical to electronics, you know, mechanical, industrial, engineers were important, for example, but over as we have evolved, it's, you know, we're now hiring firmware engineers and software development engineers on top of mechanical and polymer and electrical and electronics engineers. So, you know, we work hard to make sure that we're keeping our talent pool in check with where the industry is going and what the industry's needs are.
Mm-hmm.
It's not easy to always find that. We've most recently, as you mentioned in the beginning of the program, we've moved our Trucklight headquarters out of Jamestown, New York, to here on campus, which has been a great win for us, you know, to have the relationship not only with Barron, but with the professors and with the students for internships and potentially hiring in the future. We moved our corporate headquarters into Southfield, Michigan, and our R&D center into Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, just off of the Carnegie Mellon campus, to have access to, again, students, engineers, professors, and technology to help us stay ahead of where things are going.
In all three of those locations, I know, like in Michigan, you're right next to a university. Here in Erie, you're right next to a university, and the same thing at, you know, obviously in Pittsburgh as well.
That's correct. We try to partner with the local universities to help us
and
support us.
So how is it? I know you've only been here a few months in Knowledge Park, and how's it going?
It's going great. So we're finally all moved in. The team's all together. We're in one location on the third floor. Very open environment. Access to each other is very easy compared to where we were in our past building, and the morale is much better. It's a beautiful park, nice and bright, and just easily accessible.
One of the things I've noticed in both your Michigan headquarters and here is you pay a lot of attention to the design of the office space itself. It's not the old cubicle world, and I think this means a lot to you. You personally get involved in that design. What are you looking for there?
It does. Well, as the business, again, has evolved, we need a different level of talent, and you know, we try to create that West Coast feel. And that's where a lot of the talent comes from. So, you know, it's a very open, bright environment with coffee bars and relaxation areas and workout centers that are available to all of our staff. But our customer base is very conservative. Mm-hmm. So we try to stay away from the bright colors mm-hmm. that you might see in Google or in Uber. And we've sort of dumbed it down a little bit and made it more conservative with our color palette and our carpets and our furniture, et cetera. So you still have that nice, bright, open environment in a more of a conservative
feel. Yeah. But you don't have like a, I've seen some companies, they have a separate conference room where you don't even see the plant yet and they want to wow you with that. You don't do that. You bring them right in.
That's right. You bring them right in.
Yeah, that seems like the right way to go. Well, let's go back though for a second to innovation and product development. I've heard you say a lot in our conversations, it's not enough to be first with a product. What do you mean by that?
The product has to be what the customer needs. It needs to be a product that solves a problem, a major problem. You know, in our industry, downtime, you know, tractor and trailer downtime will kill a customer. Mm-hmm. So you've got to keep that equipment up and running all the time. So we're constantly looking for products and innovation that keep the customer up and running and have them want to pull the product through, have them specify our product on their equipment. That's the way to do it. You can be first with something, but if nobody wants it, it doesn't really
matter.
It's
no good.
Right? It has to solve a major issue.
So how do you get your team out there? How do they figure that out? I mean, you got to have a formula for doing that.
We're out in front of the customer all the time. So we're out in front of all the major fleets around the country, talking to them on a regular basis about what their issues are. We're constantly looking for solutions to solve that. We work very closely with the OEMs, whether it's the truck OEMs or the trailer OEMs or the automotive OEMs or the marine OEMs and staying close to them also and what their issues are and trying to bring new technology to market as quickly as possible.
Wow. Well, you've also talked a lot about the fact that electric vehicles are coming. This isn't hypothetical. So why don't you tell us what you see, what's coming, and what are the implications of that?
Sure. So, you know, I tell our team all the time, whether we like it or not, they're coming. Look, there is the issue is trying to be resolved with the infrastructure. But if we can put the infrastructure aside for a minute, it needs to be in place. All the major OEMs are going down that path. You can see that at the big three in the United States right now, you know, in Europe, all the car companies in Japan mentioned 5 years ago what their goals were for electrification, all their major cities throughout their countries. So, you know, right now, what you hear is GM plans to be 100% electric by 2035. Mm-hmm. Most of the European car manufacturers are planning on being fully electric by 2030. When you look at the heavy duty market, the big class eights, they're projecting 20% of the class eights will be electric by 2030, and 30% of the medium duty trucks will be electric by 2030. And then 100% of both class eights and medium duties will be electric by 2040. Hmm. It's not that far away.
No, it isn't. Is there enough? You know, there are a lot of components to that, but one we hear about in the news is the battery technology itself and, you know, the minerals and the rare earth minerals that are necessary. Is that a problem or is that being solved? And I know that's not necessarily what you do, but it seems like that's a key need.
I think it's an issue today, and I believe they're working through that. So there's a lot of discussion as to whether how they'll handle long haul versus short haul on the commercial truck application. So there's a lot of discussion around hydrogen fuel cell mm-hmm. for the long hauls, which is... it's not new technology. It was used on the Apollo mission back in the 60s and early 70s to go to the moon. That's how they generated their power back then. So it's just taking that technology and modifying it for long-haul applications. But if you think about medium-duty and short-haul, mm-hmm. you know, day cab applications for trucks that are going out and back the same day, mm-hmm. pure electric will work fine. But it's just working through the details of the battery technology today.
And the work that Trucklight does and Clariant's, you said... it's not necessarily even about LED lights. You're all into reducing power consumption across the board. So what's that translate into?
So we put together an initiative called A to Z, which is amps to zero. So when we first launched LED technology, we were able to reduce the amp draw from an incandescent lamp anywhere from 50% to almost 80% reduce the amps. Our goal today is to take that, reduce it another 50% over the next 5 years, mm-hmm. or take it as close to zero as possible. Parasitic loads on an electric vehicle will kill battery life. Mm-hmm. Lights are a parasitic load. A radio is a parasitic load. Windshield wipers are parasitic loads. So reducing the amp draw is absolutely critical, which puts us in a really good spot because almost everything we manufacture today has an LED in it and a circuit board. So, you know, I believe our business is in a really good spot to help support both the automotive, off-road, marine, and heavy truck market going forward as this technology evolves.
You know, it's a fascinating space. So if our students here are at Penn State and at Behrend come to campus, they can get a job working for you. They can start their career working for you.
We'd love to talk to them.
They'd be working on these problems?
They sure would.
Yeah, you put them right in there, don't you?
We would. We have our corporate laboratory here on campus also, so there's a lot of testing going on. The engineers are designing it right here on campus. At the headquarters, we're doing the test work right next door. And our factories are in, our truck light factories are in Cowdersport, Wellsboro, and McElhattan, Pennsylvania, just a few hours away. We're actually doing the production.
Let's talk a little bit more about the labs you have. So you moved your corporate headquarters, you got a great office as well, but you're actually in several buildings. So you built that nice laboratory facility up there, and you've got a long test tunnel. So what happens there?
So everything we manufacture is mandated by the federal government and has to meet federal testing requirements. So most of our products fall under Federal Motor Vehicle Safety Standard 108 or FMVSS 108, which requires a high degree of testing, whether it's photometric testing, dust, moisture, vibration, etc. So everything we manufacture has to be tested initially and approved for production, and then everything we manufacture has to be recertified on a regular basis for due care. So that laboratory is testing new designs, new concepts, helping through that whole process up front, but it's also verifying that what we manufacture in our factories every day is still meeting federal regulations.
And if somebody's interested in designing new products, they can get involved in that as well?
Sure, absolutely.
It's a real great value proposition, I like to say to our students. We're bringing the co-op to campus. So you work for a world-class company like Trucklight right here, and we can't beat that.
Yeah, we have a history of hiring Behrend engineering grads. Most recently, we've been trying to take advantage of the resources for summer intern work, which we welcome. And then that's a good opportunity for us to work with the students and see if there's a fit for the long run when they graduate.
So beyond the hiring, which is super important, we know that, and we're proud of the many graduates there. You know, what does Trucklight get out of it? And beyond that, and this whole open lab philosophy that we've got here.
Well, we're bringing students in as first-time employees with a very strong hands-on background and experience. So in some cases, we're not having to teach them some of the basics of part design or of how to run a molding machine or test a molding machine or test a part that's being run on a molding machine. They're getting that experience here in the open lab at Behrend. And that's just with the plastics, same with electronics and other degrees. So that hands-on experience goes a long way in being able to hit the ground running when we bring them on board.
Yeah. And, I don't know what the number is, but would you estimate how much of your workforce are Penn State grads?
Today, it's probably, at Trucklight, it's a good question, Ralph. It's probably 25-30% at least.
I know, it seems quite significant when I go up there. Well, let's switch to, you created and you led this effort to create an early career professorship here at Penn State Behrend. And we've got a faculty member who now holds that title. Why'd you do that?
Can I give you a long answer to that question?
Absolutely.
So we talked about electric vehicles earlier and electric trucks. In order to have an electric truck, or in the future an autonomous truck, you have to have a smart trailer. And trailers are the last bastion in the world that have no intelligence. Almost everything we have on our bodies that we carry with us or we drive in or we utilize is smart. Trailers today are still dumb. And if you think about a trailer hauls 75% of the country's manufactured goods and food products on a daily basis, 75%, only 20% is hauled by rail, and there's five that's other. And that trailer, which contains all that material, has no intelligence to it. We don't know where it's at. We don't know how that trailer's performing. We don't know how the goods are inside that trailer, for example. So as we're getting more involved and we're developing more products for the trucking and automotive industry with electrification, it's forcing us to figure out ways on how to make that trailer smart. The truck has to know what the tire pressure is. Otherwise, if the tire pressure is low, you're going to have roll resistance, right? And that's going to reduce the battery life. It needs to know if its lights are working properly or if it needs to reduce the amps on the lights to improve the battery life on the tractor. So there has to be communication between the tractor and the trailer. So as we're doing that, and we're getting data to our customers and we're telling them what their issues are, they're now approaching us and saying, it's great that I know that I have a problem. Can you start telling me when I'm going to have the next one?
Mm-hmm.
And that requires data analytics. So as our business is growing in the telematics space, specifically on trailers at this point in time, we're trying to figure out a way how we can take that data, analyze that data, and start to do predictive analytics so that we can give our customers a heads up to make a modification to a component on their vehicle before it actually happens.
Yeah, if you can do that, it's so powerful.
Very powerful. So we thought the best way to start would be to partner with Behrend to try to get the early professorship program in place and start educating students on the whole concept that hopefully in the future we will be able to utilize either in summer intern jobs or full-time employment.
Well, I think you couple that with the faculty member in the School of Engineering who's going to be working on that. We've got the data analytics program coming online next year. We already have a number of faculty with that expertise, so we're excited to see where it goes. So
that's great. We're excited too. It has a bright future. Everything's going that way.
One of the things I've always been impressed in my conversations with you is how much you've grown the company. The numbers since when you started to where you're at today. And you did that by internal growth, but you've also figured that out through acquisitions. And, you know, you went from Trucklight to Clariance, which is a much larger company. How'd you do that?
Yeah, so when I started at Trucklight, since I started at Trucklight, we've acquired 12 companies over that period of time. But look, we're out trying to grow in the space that we're in. We're out trying to grow in areas that we don't have relationships today, that where we're applying similar technology, similar methods, similar design methods, but maybe in a different form. We got involved in the off-road market with lighting. It's a little bit different than the trucking market, but it's the same components, mm-hmm. same manufacturing methods. It's just a different look and a different customer base. We branched out into the marine market, also into telematics, and we branched out globally. But look, we're out looking for good companies that have, number one, have a strong team. I mean, that's the first thing we look at. We look at the team, look at the brand.
Mm-hmm.
Are there a well-respected brand in the industry? We're not looking to buy the bottom guy. We're looking to buy that top guy that has a relationship that we can build upon and utilize synergies just to help grow the business. And then we share technology across all the businesses also on a regular basis, which helps us grow.
So it's really the team that makes it the right fit.
Absolutely.
And, of course, the technology and the like. Have you had any acquisitions that didn't go as well?
Well, in all the years...
You don't have to name them.
But. No, that's right. We had...
You've had 12 successful ones.
We did. We had one business in Europe that we sold off a few years ago. That it was a similar type of product in a different application. It just wasn't the right fit. We found a good home for it. But it's the only business that we've ever sold off in 30 years.
Hey, it's still an awfully good record. How would you describe, you know, switching on you here a little bit, tell me a little bit about how you lead. And if you were to explain to somebody, what's your leadership style, philosophy?
It depends on who you ask.
Fair enough.
But I always try to lead by example. I would never expect anyone that's part of the whole Clariance organization to do more than I do. And I try to show that. I'm very engaged with the employees. I try to get around to the businesses as much as I can. And I try to be in the details as much as possible without getting out of the way, because I think you've got to be in the details or you can get in trouble. And at the end of the day, you know, everybody is looking for direction. And I feel I've got to be the guy that has to set that initial direction. We've got a great team that can run with it. And a lot of times that direction comes working together, obviously. But then, you know, making sure that the team has the resources that they need, whether it's capital resources or it's headcount resources or manufacturing, whatever that might be, to achieve the end target.
And you have to make sure that they're always looking to the future. That's not always an easy conversation.
No, that's right, because sometimes you get wrapped up in the tactical issues of the day. You know, we have daily staff meetings. We get together for a half an hour every morning, Monday, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday. And then we put aside every week almost 2 hours where we just sit and talk strategy to keep that in focus.
Brian, could you tell us a bit about what's been the impact of COVID? We talk about that a lot, but particularly, you know, the supply chain disruption. We're dealing with inflation. How are those impacting your business? What do you see as the future prospect?
Probably the biggest issue we've seen out of COVID really has been the supply chain. We worked through all the personnel issues with COVID and how to protect our employees. But still today, you know, there are still ships parked offshore. The driver shortage is worse than it's ever been because of a lack of supply of components globally. They cannot produce enough tractors or trailers to haul freight. So it's really sped up our development of our telematics products, which we talked about earlier. They're necessary for an electric truck in order to make the trailer smart. But, you know, knowing where that trailer is before it gets loaded, knowing if it's ready to be driven on the road ready, mm-hmm. if the tires are inflated, if the lights are legal, et cetera, the door's open if it's loaded or unloaded. There's 5 million trailers out supporting 1.8 million tractors. So two-thirds of all trailers are sitting idle, disconnected from a tractor at any given point in time. And in order for all those trailers to be efficiently managed and on the road as much as possible due to the driver shortage, telematic systems are going to be necessary here going forward. So the pandemic has really driven the need for smart trailers here going forward.
So in addition to smart trailers, how about autonomous tractor trailers? Is that in our future?
It is. There are a lot of companies out there testing, developing that technology as we speak. It'll take a lot longer than the electric vehicle. You know, I think they're projecting 2040, 2045, we'll start to see more of that on the highway, but it's absolutely coming. I think we'll see it in areas off highway to begin with. You'll see it in yards of fleets where they're moving mm-hmm. trailers around to get them loaded will probably be autonomous. Maybe some food delivery will be a little bit autonomous on sidewalks, for example, as they test that technology, but it's absolutely coming to the on-highway market.
So we're getting close to the end, so I got a few more questions. I wanted to come back, and I'd love to hear about the leadership philosophy, by the way. And I mean, it's clear that you're always driving this vision of growth. And I like to try to make sure we understand that at Barron, but our students need to see that that's what they're going to be expected to deliver when they get out there. So where I'm going with this question is, for students who are looking at a career in engineering or coming to Barron, you know, what are the things that you would tell them? What advice do you have for young people?
Well, look, I believe we're going to see more change in the next 10 years than we saw in the last 50. If you think about where technology is going today, just in transportation, which drives the economy in the United States, the transportation industry drives the economy. And electronics and digital technology is in everything that we do. My first piece of advice is be prepared that things are going to move fast.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we have a slogan, moving at the speed of light, internal right now, that our marketing department came up with, and we're trying to do that with everything that we do and the way we think. You need to be smart about it, but we've got to move quick because the world's moving fast. The other piece of advice I would give new students is don't be afraid to stick around for a while and build a foundation. You know, a lot of the successful individuals I see out in the industry and in our business are the ones that are willing to stick around through the good times and the bad times,
mm-hmm.
and learn how to deal with complex issues within the business or within their own departments or within the technology that they're developing when times are good and when times are bad. A lot of times you see some of the newer students coming out wanting to just continue to move forward, which is great, and we should all have goals to do that. But you need to learn how to manage in good and bad times, whether it's due economically or within the business cycle itself, just to have that strong foundation.
I think what you're saying, too, is there's no overnight success. Behind every success story, it's usually a lot of hard work and failure to get you there as well, too.
That's correct. Anything worth having is hard to get. I mean, I think if individuals realize that, they'll see more success.
You know, you also serve on our Council of Fellows Board of Directors, really important group for driving this college forward. And, you know, why do you do that? What do you get out of it? And you know, tell us what you do there on the board.
Well, look, I really enjoy it. I enjoy working with you and your team and seeing where the school's going and just being part of that and just using whatever experience I have or I've been fortunate enough to glean from some of the mentors I've had throughout my career and try to pass that on to see if it helps. I want to try to give back. Barron gave me a lot in my career and just simple little things I've learned here early on, you know, I still try to apply today. And I'm hoping to be able to give back to help the school grow and benefit future graduates for their careers.
We appreciate it, and we get a lot out of it as well. Well, we're coming to the close here, so do you have any closing thoughts, things you want to add?
No, I appreciate you giving me the time this afternoon to talk with you a little bit about our business and in my career and what we're doing. And I think having our headquarters here on campus, as I said, is something that's going to be beneficial to us, and I hope beneficial to the students, and would encourage them to, if they have any questions, to reach out, and we'd love to talk with them.
Well, we're so excited about the partnership. You know, we've been partners with Trucklight for a long time, so I'll just add a little bit more to the story. People ask me, well, how did you get Trucklight there? And a similar thing, I say, well, you know, we worked with them for 20 years and we became good partners. And then when the opportunity was there, they decided to relocate in Knowledge Park. So that's why I have a lot of confidence in what's going to happen in the long term. You've been listening to Barron Talks. I'm Chancellor Ralph Ford, and my guest today has been Brian Cupcella, the CEO of Clariance Technologies and Trucklight Corporation here in Knowledge Park at Penn State Barron. Thank you, Brian.
Thank you, Ralph.